Second, while I get my computer sorted. Oh no, why is it going up there? There we go. All right. So, welcome to today's Lunch and Learn for June. We are talking about supporting and positive engagement in therapy. So I suppose we had a couple of people throughout our times being like, what do you want to learn about? What can we talk about? It was just about how do we support our young people who don't want to come to therapy or don't want to be here, don't want to engage? What can we do? How can we support them? So that's kind of, yeah, that's what we're exploring today. A couple of things that we'll touch on: why engagement matters, like why does it matter that they are engaged in therapy, that they want to come, some of the common barriers we see, or maybe why our young people don't want to participate or be a part of it. A little tiny like snippet of a theory in there, not a lot. Some strategies and approaches to support engagement, a little bit of a case study, how we can manage sort of our own responses as therapists or even like, you know, as parents. And then I have a couple of parent perspectives in there that I've got from some of our parents of young people we've worked with. I thought it was really important when I was preparing for this. I said, if we're talking about supporting people who haven't wanted to engage in therapy, I think it's really important that we get their perspective. So I asked a couple of my young people for what their thoughts were, some of the ones that maybe had a hard time engaging at the start. Asked a couple of parents who've had kind of experiences where their kids have had a hard time engaging. Just because I thought that was really important to get their input. And then a little bit of time for Q&A at the end. So that is our plan. So why engagement matters. So I think when I'm talking about engagement, I'm meaning sort of like connecting with the therapist, participating in therapy sessions and completing of tasks outside of sessions, if those are things that are set, like, you know, try this at home, give this a try. So kind of being able to do those things, participate in sessions, engage in conversations or in therapies or whatever that looks like. So I think engagement from our young people and buy-in means overall just more success in therapy. Like if they are engaged, they're wanting to be here, they sorry, I'm just going to let pausing while I let one in. Ooh, oh no. Yes, so I think, you know, yeah, having them engaged and buy-in means more successful in therapy. So if we're sitting in a session and they don't want to be here, they don't want to participate, they're probably not listening, they're not going to want to engage. If the goals aren't aligned with what they want to do, they're not going to do them at home. And then we can get so much as to like therapy refusal. They just refuse to come, they don't want to be here. And obviously, that is not therapeutic. That's not going to be successful. In therapy at all. And so we really want to make sure that our young people that we're supporting kind of want to be here or want to be here as much as they can, or we can get them to participate or have a positive experience of therapy. So yeah, in that, having a positive experience of accessing healthcare or therapy, particularly when it's like a mental health point of view, is really, really crucial. We want, if nothing else, for their experience of getting help and their experience of getting therapy to be positive. Because if, say, now is not the time, they're not quite ready to engage, or they're not ready to, you know, explore what it is that someone has referred them to do, if we can at least give them a positive experience of therapy, then when they are ready, they're more likely to want to come back. So I think that's really, really important. And that's kind of what I try to keep at the forefront of my therapy specifically, is that we want to make sure at the end of the day that it's at least a positive experience. So if we're talking about a child, maybe when they're an adult, they don't have this horrible negative view of getting help and getting support and getting therapy. And you know, research shows, and so many people say, that a good therapeutic relationship or a therapeutic alliance, so between the client and the therapist, is key to success in therapy. It's like one of the most important things. That there's a good positive therapeutic relationship and there's a good therapeutic alliance. So we're working towards sort of all the same goals. Couple of barriers to engagement. Obviously, this is not all of them. This is just me putting up a couple of common ones that I've seen or some things that other people speak about. So the stigma associated with getting support can be a barrier. So particularly maybe for teenagers who are reaching out to get sort of support for their mental health, there's that stigma around, oh, well, why do you need help? Like, what's wrong with you? Or that kind of language. So there can still be, even though I feel like it's getting better in society, there's still very much a stigma associated with seeking help and getting support. And then, not understanding why we would be going to therapy or the benefits of engaging in therapy or the reason for it. One of the quotes from a parent we got for one of our young people was that the parent said it was more that he just didn't see the need for therapy. Just through the assessment process, it was able to show him things that maybe were harder for him than others, and it was nice to have that acknowledged. It's been a slow pace, but he now wants to come, but also actually can see where therapy can help and why it's useful. So I think that can sometimes be really important for our young people to know, like, why are you here? Do you know why you've come? Did anyone explain to you why we're here? Do you know what I can help with? Do you know what the purpose is? I think that's sometimes we get people coming in like, I don't even know. I don't know what you do. I don't know why I'm here. Someone just told me I need to come. So I think that's really important as well. And then a history of poor therapeutic experiences. So maybe they've engaged with therapists before in the past and it's been a negative experience. So that can definitely be a barrier to engaging again. Fear of judgment. So particularly, I think, I mean, it can be with all young people, but I think especially like teenagers, they and tend to have that fear that, oh, well, my therapist is going to judge me, they're going to think poorly of me, or I don't want to actually tell them what's going on, because if they really knew what was happening, then they would judge me and they wouldn't, I can't, sh surely I can't actually engage with them and tell them what's really happening because I'm scared of what they would say or what they would think or the judgment of that. And then within that as well, like having just that limited therapeutic relationship or just not knowing the therapist. Like, I often say to my young people, hi, I'm pretty much a complete stranger to you, and I'm asking you a whole lot of really personal questions. So it's okay that you're maybe not sure and you don't want to talk to me right now about these things. Like, you just don't know me. And I did ask one of my young people, what were some of the challenges in those early stages? And she just sort of said, well, I had two young people, and they both sort of made the comment that I just didn't know you. Like, I just don't know you, and I didn't feel comfortable. And then the other one, I just didn't feel comfortable yet. I wasn't comfortable here. So again, not feeling comfortable or safe in this space can be a huge barrier to engagement. Maybe it's just that they've never, again, because of all sorts of reasons, could be there's been a poor experience of going to like a clinic setting or going and meeting health professionals, or maybe they just, for all sorts of reasons, they could just be not feeling comfortable in the place, either with you or not feeling safe in the space as well. Limited awareness or ability to disclose what's sort of going on. So that, I guess, kind of runs in a little bit to sort of understanding why they're here, but also maybe they don't know why they're here and they don't see why they've been referred. Like, maybe that awareness of maybe what's going on, what the challenges are, maybe they don't understand. Maybe someone's referred them for like emotional regulation support or something, and they might be like, I don't have any issues with my emotional regulation. What do you mean? I don't see that that's a challenge. And so that can be a real barrier as well. Like, if they don't know, or they're not aware of that, or that's not a priority for them, and maybe they, or they may know it's kind of a challenge, but they actually don't have the words or they don't have the ability to share that sort of stuff. So I think sometimes it can be easy for us as therapists, like definitely for myself, to make assumptions that because they haven't answered the question, it's just, oh, they don't want to let me know, they don't want to tell me, or they don't want to engage with me, when it actually could be that they don't know how to answer the question, or they don't know how to share that information, or they don't know themselves. They actually don't know the answer. So that's, I think, really important to keep in mind. History of trauma can have all sorts of, challenges to engagement, and maybe we don't know, depending on what the trauma is, that can be, leading to difficulties, with disrupted attachment, and so building relationships with new people can be really tricky. We don't know what the trauma was. It could be all sorts of things that make it difficult for them to engage. Could be even just like the therapist, maybe it's a certain like hair color, or maybe it's the sound of someone's voice could be something that's a little bit challenging, or the place looks familiar to somewhere that was a really negative place for them. So we don't really know, but definitely there's history of trauma. And then history of disrupted attachments, that can be really difficult as well. And then mental health symptoms in themselves can also present then the barrier to them engaging in therapy. So, anxiety makes you, maybe you're anxious about coming to therapy, you're anxious about meeting new people, you're anxious about going to new places. That can be a real barrier and a real challenge. Some of the symptoms that come with depression, like feelings of hopelessness, like what's the point? What's the point in coming to therapy? I feel
Referring to hypomania
yeah.
or
So exactly. So we've got like the one end where we're feeling hopeless, maybe we're really lacking in that ability to get ourselves up and out of bed, but really struggling to do the things, even though we may know that they're probably good for us to do. That can be really difficult, and can definitely be a barrier. And then we just had another comment that the other end as well, like hypomania, where it's like, well, we're doing all these other things and there's too much other stuff to do, and I've got to be here and I've got to be there, or it's fine, everything's fine. I actually don't need help anymore. Everything's really, really great. I don't need to be here. Everything's fine and dandy. So both kind of ends can be really challenging, and lots of all other mental health symptoms as well. But yeah, I just think that's important to keep in mind, that may perhaps the reason why they're coming, which might be around their feeling anxious or depressed, might actually then be itself a barrier to them engaging. So I think that's important to keep in mind as well. Little tiny little itty bitty one slide of some theory stuff. So this is something that I found very, very important and helpful in my practice. So this is Kim Golding's therapeutic pyramid of need. And so it kind of talks about, where do we need to start in therapy? What do we need to be focusing on before we can move up? So it's sort of like Maslow's hierarchy of need, if you've seen that, where it talks about like, basic physiological needs, and then we kind of move up to safety, all the way up to like, I think self-actualization is at the top. But it's sort of similar to that, but specifically around therapeutic needs. And she specifically does work when we're talking about children who've experienced trauma. That's kind of her area. So it starts at the bottom with feeling emotionally and physically safe is the most important. And I think that's really important to remember then, from a therapeutic point of view and in therapy, if our young people are not feeling safe, we can't move on from that. That is the most important. So we really need to be focusing on in our sessions that that we're safe here, like in sessions, in therapy sessions, that within then beyond that, as we're working with the young people in our world and in our environments, where are we feeling safe? Are there places where we're not feeling safe? And safety really needs to come first. Then after that is developing relationships. So we need to feel safe emotionally and physically. Then we need to develop relationships, and that is really important. So developing a positive therapeutic relationship with your therapist, developing positive relationships with your friends and family and the people that are outside supporting you, that's another really, really important thing. And then we move up to co-regulation. So before we can move up to, empathy, reflection, exploring trauma, learning our own strategies, we're starting with feeling safe, developing relationships, then co-regulation and getting that support. But again, from like that therapeutic point of view, supporting them with that co-regulation from the families or support people's point of view, and then we can kind of go from there. I think what's really challenging is sometimes when we have goals, and our goals often sit at the top of that hierarchy. We're talking about regulation, or exploring this or understanding that, but we really need to get through those foundational levels first. And some young people, that might be faster than others. Some young people might take a couple of sessions and they feel like safe and they've got a good relationship. Others, it might be a year and a half and we finally have a positive therapeutic relationship. It just takes time. So it says on that, in order to succeed, achieve successful therapeutic intervention, it's crucial that we start at the bottom and work our way up. So strategies and approaches. Again, this is like just a little bit of some thoughts, some ideas. I tried to sort of break it up into a couple of key areas, but There's definitely more. I also kind of found it difficult to put it into, clear ways that we can go. So this is just a couple of ones. So I thought, considering safety and relationship at the base two parts of that hierarchy, that talking about that I think is really important. So focusing on safety first, how can we make therapy safe places for our young people? All sorts of different things we can do, but these are some of the things that I thought were really important. Listening to our young people, I think, is really important. And I think sometimes we might think, of course, I'm listening to my client, of course, I'm listening to my young person. But I think sometimes it's important that we listen and we then, as we're listening, we respect what they have to say. So respecting their boundaries that they might put in place. So they might say, I don't want to talk about that. I think that's important that then we don't respect that. If they say they don't want to talk about it, you've told me something, you've set, I guess, a boundary with me. And I think it's really important that we respect that, especially when we're in those early, stages of building safety. And safety is kind of where we're at in building those therapeutic relationships. Really important to have fair and clear boundaries. So whatever your boundary is on certain things, whether it's you're playing and things need to stay on the floor or whatever, or you can throw things but not at my face or whatever, in all sorts of situations, whatever your boundaries are, make them clear, but then make them fair. Like, I think, especially in those early kind of stages, depending on the young person, they are probably going to be trying to push those boundaries a lot. They're in that stage going, what can I do? How far can I push? If I push really far, is this person still going to be there for me? Are they going to come back, or are they going to get mad at me? And they're going to most likely be doing a bit of that push and pull. So if we can kind of go, okay, well, look, happy for you to throw things, that's fine. You can even throw things at me, but you can maybe only throw them at my feet or at my legs or wherever your boundary is or whatever you think is appropriate for that young person. But fair and clear and then consistent is really important. And then in that, being consistent is really important, not just in our I guess our boundaries, but being consistent in that, you're regularly showing up to therapy, you're gonna be there. That's really important. Young people really need that consistency, especially when we're talking about building safety. And if there's difficulty, a history of disrupted attachments and challenges there, it's really important that we stay consistent. And especially if the last session maybe didn't go so well, maybe they didn't want to be here, maybe there was some words being thrown about that are not particularly kind, really important that then we show up again the next session and that we're there, that we're consistent. Discussing confidentiality with young people, I think, again, is really important, letting them know that it's a safe space for them to talk about what they want to talk about if they do. That, what you talk about can just be between you and them, but you, because you want to keep them safe, if they're at risk themselves or at the risk to someone else, or someone else is going to get hurt from the things they've shared with you, then you have to tell someone. But other than that, making sure that they know that this is their place and this is a safe space and it doesn't have to go beyond you guys unless it's completely necessary to. And then as well, I think preparing our young people for what they can expect. So if that can start from, like, families at home or carers or support people, preparing them for what it might look like. Sometimes I encourage young people to have a look on our website, and I'm like, my name is Megan. Feel free to have a look on our website. There's a photo of me there if that's going to help you feel more comfortable, so you can expect what I might look like. Or have a look, there's photos of what our space looks like. That can sometimes be helpful for helping them feel prepared and helping them feel safe. And then even in sessions, talking about preparing our young people for what therapy is probably going to look like, and encouraging them to be a part of that decision making as well. Like, hey, this is our first session, probably just going to ask you a bunch of questions and you can do this or you can do that. And then in our next session, we might play a couple more games together because I just want to get to know you, or whatever it is that you're doing. I think preparing our young people for what they can expect can be really helpful. And then moving on from that, a lot of these things, kind of like all these things I've talked about in focusing on safety, also help with the building therapeutic relationship. Like, it all kind of works together. Building a therapeutic relationship, really important to engage their interests. So if they are big fans of Pokemon, then start learning about Pokemon. I don't know much, but I'm trying to learn. Or, what did I learn about the other day? That was something that I had to watch. I don't know, Yu-Gi-Oh! I had my young person who really loved Yu-Gi-Oh! So I was like, okay, bring in your Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards. Teach me how to play. Let's play. And that's what we did for a couple of sessions. It was really fun. I was like, man, maybe I could get into this over time, but it should be fun. But engaging their interests, and then also kind of comes with the last point about being authentic, but engage with their interests genuinely as well. Like, kids and young people will know if you're just trying to be polite. So as much as you can, actually engage in what they are interested in. Ask genuine questions, want to learn, try to understand what they like and why they like it. Following their lead is really important. So coming in, hey, do you want to play this game? No, I don't want to play that game. Awesome. What if I have a young people say to me, I don't want to do that, I'm almost just as stoked as if they'd say yes, because that means that they're at least some point in our relationship they feel comfortable enough to say, no, I don't want to do that, which I think is great and really important. So if someone says, no, I don't want to do that, awesome, great, thank you for telling me. We don't have to do that. That's fine. This therapy session is yours. What do you want to do instead? And then they might come up with an idea. You might have to give them some prompts, but following their lead is really important. Again, sort of what we're talking about with the boundaries, like if you've started talking about something and they kind of shut down, don't want to talk about it, you can ask them, hey, I'm noticing that maybe you're looking away. Let's see, you didn't really answer my question. I wonder if you don't want to talk about this today. And if they say they don't, maybe let's not. Again, especially while we're building that therapeutic relationship. Reducing demands. I think really important to, especially in those early stages when we're building a therapeutic relationship, and particularly for our young people who maybe don't want to be here. I think that we've said that safety and relationship is the most important. So at that point in time, that is what our focus of therapy, even if our goals might be fine motor skills and self-care, this is really important, this safety and this therapeutic relationship. And so maybe we just need to purely focus on that. And then as the relationship and safety and all of that build, we can then go from there. So maybe let's, if they don't love the fine motor skills games or assessments or whatnot that you have to do, can we push that off a little bit and can we just focus on building relationship, engaging? Playfulness, I think, is really important. As you feel like you can, I find sometimes, we've got young people, especially as I was saying before, where they're trying to push those boundaries a little bit, push and pull. They might kind of come at you with something that's a little bit like, I don't know, maybe a little bit mean or a little bit borderline. Oh, a little bit. Were you like having a dig at me? And I think it works really well if we can just engage playfully with that. So instead of getting, oh, that hurt my feelings. That's really unkind. Maybe eventually you might want to get there if that's part of your goals in therapy to kind of talk about, oh, that actually kind of hurt my feelings. But in these early stages, can we play it off as like a, oh yeah, absolutely. Like I've had a young person say to me, oh my goodness, you're so weak. I was like, I am weak. I think maybe I need to go to the gym a little bit more. I think you're right. Just like playing it off, or, oh, that's really stupid. It's like, oh, I totally misunderstood that. I absolutely got it wrong. You're right. How silly of me.
Got called the Temu version of an OT, and it was the best compliment because he engaged and he laughed after he said it. And I was like, that is the best word ever. I am
Absolutely.
taking that.
Yep. Teamy version of an OT. We'll take it. Absolutely. So kind of, you kind of need to sort of, I don't know, not get offended by things. I don't know how to say that professionally. But engage in that playfulness. Like, be okay if a young person is saying this sort of stuff or calling you out. Because often, when if they're at the point where they're calling you out and then they laugh about it, and you can kind of then use that as a way to engage. And yeah, I think that's really important. Being authentically yourself, again, I think comes into that as well. Like I said before, young people will see straight through you if you're trying to put on a bit of a show and a facade. They'll kind of know. So just try and be yourself and be authentic and come up, and where appropriate, you can share, self-disclose things if it's relevant and if it helps them engage. Like I watch anime, and so that is often a thing. Thank goodness I never used to watch anime, but then my partner was like, "You should watch anime with me." And I was like, "Okay." The best professional development, I would say, because the way that it's because I've watched anime, a lot of my young people love anime, and that's an awesome talking point to get you to engage with the young people. Not saying that you need to know everything about everything pop culture, but when there's opportunities for self-disclosure where it's relevant and it's relevant to the young person and can help them feel more comfortable with you or support their engagement, that's really, really helpful. And then time, it just takes time. And yeah, I feel like that is just really important to remember. And again, for some young people, time might be 5 sessions. Some young people, time might be 1.5 years. For some young people, it might be 2 sessions, and great. It just really depends on the young person and how they're feeling and where they're at. Sometimes I think it can all this stuff can be really difficult depending on what model you are working under. So if you're working under NDIS and you perhaps know that you're going to see this young person for a number of years, and so you have the time and you're like, oh, if it takes a year for us to build a relationship, that's okay because I know there's other goals and we can be working therapeutically, and which I'll talk on next, working with the family is really important as well. Then that's okay. But if you're, say, working under a mental health care plan or a chronic disease management plan and you have a handful of sessions, that can be really, really tough. But again, like I said at the beginning, I would far prefer to go, okay, we've had 5 sessions, we didn't get to too much with the young person, but there was a positive experience of therapy, and then we've spent more time perhaps with the family and the parents and educating the parents and the family so that they can do stuff behind the scenes rather than pushing this young person who is not ready, who does not want to engage in therapy at the moment, or is not ready to engage in some of those challenging conversations, and then them have a terrible experience. I think it's which is difficult, and I'm sure can be very frustrating for parents and families when that's the case. But I think that that's far more important that there's this positive experience of therapy in the end. So the next part, yeah, collaborating and educating. I think collaborating is super, super important. So collaborating with the young person is key. So whether that's around making sure collaborating with them around what goals they want to be working on, what do you want to work on, what can I help you with, what things can we be supporting, making sure that they're aware of, that they don't actually have to be here. I think that was one of the biggest things, particularly at my last workplace where I was working at Headspace, and we'd have, lots of young people coming in. And often the time I'd be like, do you actually want to be here? Like, do you want support? And someone's like, yeah, I do. I just don't know. And they'd be like, okay, that's fine. But then sometimes they'd be like, no, I don't want to be here. And I'd be like, okay, well, you don't have to be. Like, kind of letting them know that there is actually, they have a choice, especially when they're at that age where they can be making some of those key decisions. And even the young ones, like letting them know that there is that they have control over it can be really, really important. And then collaborating with family or other stakeholders or supports, again, is really important, both to make sure the family knows about this stuff, where we're like, safety is really important, building on a therapeutic relationship, positive experience of therapy is really, really important. But then also, if we know, say, in therapy sessions, we're purely focusing on safety and building a positive therapeutic relationship, and that's what we can do in sessions with the young person, can some of the other therapeutic interventions be by talking to the family and getting the family involved or other support people, educating them, providing them with things that they can be doing at home, or providing the psychoeducation around certain stuff if the work, I guess, we can't do some of that one-on-one stuff with the young person just yet, they're not ready for that. Can we be intervening in other parts of the young person's life? And then yeah, that's similar education to the young person and to the family is really important. All kind of comes into one. And then alternative therapies can be really great. Some of these we use, like art-based therapies we use a lot here. We have game-based therapies at Sisu. So we run a Minecraft and a D&D group. And we have a quote from a parent about a young person who's engaged in our D&D group, and she says she comes home so energized after it on a Friday afternoon in the midst of exams, that's a pretty big thing. So I've had some young people really shine when they have opportunities to engage in other types of therapies and alternative sort of therapies and therapeutic situations. So I had a young person who I worked with who our first session of D&D asked me to introduce them for themselves. Anytime that their character said something, they wanted me to say that their character said something because they were just really, really anxious, having a really, really hard time participating and engaging in that sort of way. But they were really interested in D&D. They really wanted to play. They thought it was the coolest thing ever. And then by session three of D&D, they were yapping away. Like their character was doing things and they were able to say it themselves, and their confidence just seemed to really grow. And they huge to see so much of growth in from session one to session three was really, really awesome to see. And I think having options of different types of therapies, particularly when maybe talk-based therapy is not really suitable for the young person, or they're having a hard time engaging in, participating in more traditional, I guess, forms of what you might ways you might want to intervene. I think being creative in the way that you engage them is really important. So if you have a young person who loves arts and crafts, can we intervene through arts and crafts as much as possible? I feel like as OTs, this is kind of really where we shine. I feel like this is our bread and butter, like using occupations, using the things that young people want to do, love to do, enjoy doing, and using them therapeutically. And I think that's really important for us to think about. And then if we perhaps don't have the skills to do some of this stuff, or we don't know anything about D&D or Minecraft, but your young person loves D&D or Minecraft, looking at are there other groups that they can go to? Do they have other places where you can explore, or is there something you can upskill in? Like I said, there's m so many more. This is just a couple that I had in my mind that I wanted to pop down here. I'm trying to think. I had some notes here that I feel like I don't want to miss anything. As someone who does game-based therapy, like online, Mike Keady, I think is his name, if I'm saying that right, and he's counseling with Mike on Instagram. He does, his whole practice is through online gaming counseling, like therapy through online gaming. And so he has all sorts of different games that he does and plays and engages in therapy that way. So if you're interested in learning more about that, maybe check him out. He also has a couple of good posts on like that sort of stuff. He was the one who ran training for us so that we could learn how to do Minecraft and Minecraft therapeutically. So he's really great. Would recommend having a look at him. And I'm sure there are plenty of other people as well. He was just the first one that came to my mind. Yeah, great. Okay, so a little bit of a case study. I'm just going to take a quick drink break. This is like de-identify. There's not any identifiable information of this one person. I worked with a 13-year-old, a female. She was referred to OT after struggling with school engagement. So she was pretty much like not attending school at all, and experienced anxiety. I know that she likes glitter and she likes the cats. She got a history of, I guess, I put in quotations like refusal to engage another therapist. I'm not really a big fan of that, but she had a really hard time engaging with other therapists, sort of, not wanting, not answering questions, not sort of wanting to participate, saying not wanting to be here, but also then not wanting to not come to therapy as well. It was sort of this don't want to be here, but also kept coming. So it was a little, made me kind of go, okay, she probably does want to be here. In the initial appointment, I provided YP is just a young person, so I didn't have to type it all out. A choice of mum being in the session or her being on her own. So I think that was really important, and I often provide that to most of my own people where it's relevant and where it's helpful, just to give them that choice. In that, also because I knew that she liked glitter, I brought supplies to make glitter jars to the initial appointment, and then every session, which you can see down later, for like the next three sessions, first three sessions of ELDE, I brought something glitter related, something glitter and crafty related to every single session, just to help her participate and find something that she likes and she's interested in, and give her something that she can do to help feel more comfortable. I made her sh made sure that she knew around confidentiality and that she had a choice to engage in therapy. I always made that really clear to her. I was like, you do not have to be here if you don't want to. Like, It's absolutely your choice. You don't have to come back. So we focused a lot on relationship building and playfulness, yet with clear boundaries. So she was definitely one of those young people who would say something to try and see how I'd respond. Her saying something quite, I guess, intense, or I can't think of quite the right word to say, but she would say something really like that. You would often get a response of, oh my goodness, like you can't say that. Or, oh my God, like how dare you? That's really terrible. And so she would often kind of put those out at me, and I'd be like, well, that would be a bit unfortunate. Or like, unfortunately, I can't help you do that because, you know, is what it is, but I can do this. And so just kind of engaging in that sort of playfulness and with it, I think that was a bit disarming for her, sort of going, oh, you're not going to get mad at me for these things that I have to say? Oh, okay. And then, yeah, after 3 sessions of using Glitter Jar and Craft to sort of support engagement, after that, I was like, I brought glitter and stuff. She's like, I don't want to do that today. I don't think I need to. Okay. And then from there, we sort of focused a lot on in our sessions, was typically half a session catching up. What's been going on? What do you want to talk about? How's things? What are you doing with your cats? What's the latest challenges or whatnot? And then we do a little bit of some of the therapy, discussing therapy goals at the end. But sometimes, if we didn't even get to the therapy stuff, or she didn't want to talk about that today, we just didn't. And we still just caught up. And I think that even that in itself is still really therapeutic for her. Coming, having a space where she can talk about what's going on, someone who's listening to her, we're continuing to build that relationship, we're continuing to build that safety for her. I think that was really, really important. And then a couple months into therapy, into therapy, she was really willing to discuss these difficulties with school, which she had flat out refused to talk about early on in our time together. And then after talking about a school a couple of times, I was like, she's like, oh, I just hate it when people talk to me about school. I understand that, but you let me talk to you about school. And she said, yeah, well, you're not as annoying as other people. And so I took that as perhaps the biggest compliment. I feel like it's like the TV version of an OT. I was like, that is a huge win, a huge win. So it was just sort of, I think, because the way we went about talking about school, I guess she knew that people were going to talk to her about school. She knew that it's a thing that I guess she wanted to be able to do. But because we took the time, we took a couple of months, every time she said no, I respected her no. It actually got to a point where she was able to talk with me about school. And eventually we did get her back to school and all sorts of really good positive things. And we had a changeover to a new therapist, and it was all really positive. It was really, really great. But I always like to, you know, kind of come back to thinking about this young person when I'm thinking about how we can support engagement, because she didn't really want to be here. She had other therapists who were like, I've tried what I can, like I can't sort of do it. They weren't OTs. But just yeah, that importance of taking it slow, meeting her where she was at, letting her finding things that she loves and that she's interested in, like glitter, to engage her in therapy. So I think it's really important. And I definitely had to, in this with this young person, just reduce my expectations of what I thought therapy was meant to look like, and what I guess had to be successful. And again, I think I was lucky and privileged that the model that I was working in, like at the workplace I was at, allowed me to have this flexibility to take the time with her that she needed. I think it's really important that we manage ourselves as therapists or even as family members, when it comes to how we're supporting our young people who don't want to having a hard time engaging in therapy, or when we're trying to support positive engagement. So, like I said just before, changing our expectations of therapy and what success in therapy looks like. Even though sometimes, and I'm absolutely guilty of it myself, I know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and I know it's important to take. Be safe, have a safe space and a therapeutic relationship, and I know it's important. But even then, I'm still like, oh my gosh, are we getting anywhere? This is slow. Like, am I doing the right thing? And you kind of have all these. So I think just making sure that we're checking ourselves on what success in therapy looks like, and that we're focusing on this stuff. And I think within that, again, it's really important to have, which I've put down further, access to regular supervision is really, really important, and making sure that you have a supervisor who can support you. With that, learning strategies to regulate ourselves when our young people are dysregulated or don't want to engage. So if they don't want to be here and maybe they're saying words that are not particularly the nicest words, or they, are completely shut down and not talking to you at all, learning to regulate yourself in that I think is really, really important, both as a parent and as a therapist, making sure that you stay calm, because if you get worked up, they're going to get more worked up, and it's just, we really need to try and do what we can to regulate ourselves and finding opportunities to do that so that we can stay calm. Learning to be flexible in sessions. So if you had this grand plan, like always is the way, you have this grand plan, let's do this, let's do that. You've got all this stuff prepared, you've gone out and bought supplies, and they come in and say, no thanks. Say, okay, no worry, we don't have to do that. Don't have to do that today. And I think that that's important, to just be flexible in that. And then staying curious. So what is a young person? Why are they doing what they're doing? What's going on behind that behavior? If it is the, pushing and the pulling and some of the, unkind words, are they doing that because they want to see how you react? Are they trying to push you away because they're worried about you getting close to them? Are they doing it because they don't know that it's me and they just think it's really funny? Like, staying curious, I think, is really important. Regular supervision, as I said, and then celebrating the small wins because they're usually actually big wins, So the small wins are really, really important. We have a wins wall in our office where we put little wins, like had a young person smile at me when they hadn't smiled in any sessions, or little things like that, and we're able to put those wins up and celebrate them, because I think that's really, really important, especially when we're working with these young people who it's going to take us a bit of time when it's taking time to build those relationships. And then I think access learning, so whether it's like lunch and learns and communities that align with this way of practice, I think is really, really important, particularly as a therapist, but also then as a parent, like finding parent groups that are all about this as well, or therapists finding therapy groups of other therapists that all align with this way of thinking, I think is really important, because if you are surrounded by people who agree and believe this way as well, it can help you a lot, rather than people who are kind of contradicting, I guess, this way of practicing. Okay, so next up, I have a couple of I've asked a couple of parents to provide a few of their perspectives. So either just like, can you let me know a little bit about your sort of experience? And then another one I gave a couple of prompting questions to. So I've put a couple of key parts in the slides, but I thought I would read out the whole quote, because I couldn't put the whole quote on the slide, it would be a lot of words. The reason why I wanted to do this is because I thought it would be helpful for us to, I guess, acknowledge what it's like from that parent's perspective, see what they've found to be helpful, what their experiences have been. And yeah, I just think it's really important to get that parent perspective. So this one says, as a parent, it can be really frustrating to have your child sit in a therapy session, hide under the table, and refuse to engage, especially when paying privately. Now, we've been to therapists who have taken more of a play-based approach and let her direct the sessions more, and ones who just tried getting her activities, which were her goals, but they were choosing things that she wasn't interested in, like handwriting, and she had no buy-in. It wasn't helping her with the emotions or frustration behind it, so behind the difficulties with handwriting to start with. So I think even engaging and getting her to engage was hard. She's not one who likes talking about feelings, so it is always going to be slow going with her, but I can definitely see a difference with someone who has taken it at her pace, listened to what she wanted, for example, when she hasn't wanted to talk, and chosen to engage her with those special interests. It was a slower time to get working on our goals, but in the end, the progress we made over the time was much more significant when she had built trust and was ready. We were experiencing therapy refusal with the more traditional approach, and it was hard as a mum because you can see that they need to work on things, but it also feels like if they don't want to go to therapy, you're not really going to progress anything. When she did have the opportunity to build that trust and relationship, she not only chose to go, but she was able to self-identify things she wanted to talk about. She even has said, I'd like to talk to my therapist about my feelings, which alone is a huge step. We still have times where we don't want to talk about things. It's not always linear, but as a parent, just having someone connect with your child on their level and really hold space, they said cliche, I know, for them has been a win for all of us. I think that's a really, I'm grateful to that parent and for both of these parents for sharing their opinions. But just, I can see how for this parent, it was when there were those refusals and stuff, even though it was difficult and I guess frustrating when it was slow. At the end of the day, slower but more positive progress seemed to be working for their child. This next parent quote, so on the other side, I asked a couple of prompting questions and they sort of responded. So the first one was, how did it feel when your child resisted going to therapy? And this parent said, it was an expected reaction. My child had been mostly oppositional for quite a while, so therapy resistance was anticipated. To avoid feeling guilty about insisting on therapy, I tried my best to find a therapist I thought my child could get along with, or at least like the idea of, to eliminate personality clash from being a reason not to go. Sometimes I lost my confidence that I was making the best choice for my child while insisting on something they didn't like, but I liken therapy to brushing teeth and other self-help chores that children sometimes refuse. Then I feel better about being that mom. What do you wish therapists understood better about your child's experience? I'm lucky that my child's therapist knows them. The things that I appreciate about my child's therapist is they understand that sometimes we are late because positively and gently getting an oppositional child to therapy can take an hour longer than necessary. They don't judge when the child is having a bad day, and a therapy session will be counterproductive. Sometimes you just need to call it a day and go to bed. They meet my child where they are with patience and kindness. Sometimes therapy can be a short session because that is where my child is at that day. Sometimes it's a game in silence too, but it's still okay just to show up. They push my child to learn or understand new skills when the timing is right. Not making progress would be frustrating. Slow progress when the time is right is perfect. And the question was, if you could give advice to a therapist working with a disengaged young person, what would you say? But don't underestimate how desperate the family is to help their child. The child most likely has low self-esteem and doesn't love themselves enough to want to engage in self-help therapy. It is pure love and desperation that gets the child to your office every week. Don't forget that teenagers don't give a lot away. Sometimes a tiny smile or a glimmer of eye contact means the world. Take encouragement in the small stuff to keep making a difference in their world. And then was there a difference? Was there anything that seemed to make a difference in helping your child feel more comfortable with therapy? Offering her the opportunity to be in control of some aspects of the session, for example, alone or with parents, what warm-up game to play, what to learn or discuss first that day. My child knows that this is her therapy and not mine or the therapist's, and that really helps. Were there things that the professionals did that helped or maybe didn't help your child feel more engaged? Said my child's first therapist gave her Hubba Bubba to chew during the session. My child didn't really get along with her very well. She was abrupt and impatient. My child only showed up just for the Hubba Bubba. But getting to know, appreciate, and like my child has been the magic. The children only start to feel comfortable when they feel a sense of belonging in their therapy. So again, thank you so much for those parents who provided that input. I think that was really, really helpful for me as well, just to see, okay, I know that this is the approach from like the theories and we understand that this is what works, but what do the parents think of that? And I think it was really helpful to hear that like it is a bit frustrating that it's slow and it's hard to sit there when we know like but at the end of the day that it's been a positive approach when it's been more that slow. We focused on that safety, we focused on that building relationships stuff kind of. Okay, and that's all the content that I had prepared. Now it is time for any question time, Q&A time, if you had questions for me. Yeah, feel free to fire away. If you are online and you don't want to say out loud, but you want to type it in the chat, that's also okay. For any questions from in the room.
Do you find that when you've got those kids that are disengaged and you have a session with them, they won't come back the next time? It usually is better the next time.
Yeah, so the question from in the room was just when you have those kids who maybe don't want to engage at all, that sort of one in one session, but then do you find that they engage better the next time? I think it Depends. Usually, yes. And especially if it's a young person that we've had some sessions already and we know there's a tiny bit of relationship, and then there's this one session where it just doesn't go well. Sometimes I will come back and say, hey, last time, seems like you really didn't want to be here that day. That's okay. Like, I wonder what was going on for you that day. And sometimes they'll be like, oh yeah, I was like really tired, or I just had a bad day, or mum forced me, or I didn't know that I was coming. No one told me. There's often reasons behind, especially when it's those sort of random ones. Sometimes you come back and the next session is the same. And I think you just have to continue in that consistency of like, okay, well, I'm here. I'm still gonna listen. I'm still gonna be here to support you. I think depending on the young person, sometimes in those sessions, you kind of have to do a, okay, is this a, let's just sit here and do something? Are they going to engage in anything with me? Are they going to color with me in the room with them? Are they going to do a craft? Are they going to play a game with me? Or are they just not in the space today and do not want to be here? And do we need to cut the session short? And I think sometimes that kind of just comes down to, I guess, your own therapeutic judgment and what where that young person is at. Or sometimes it might be a, okay, you don't want to, you don't really want to participate today. That's so fine. I can see that you don't really want to be here right now. Would it be okay if I spent, you don't have to be here forever, would it be okay if I spent 10 minutes talking to dad, parent, carer? So then at least from that parent perspective as well, I think you need to be mindful of making sure that the parents are supported in that as well. Like, hey, they're really not having a good day today. They really don't want to be here. I don't want to push it because I want their experience to be positive, and they've told me that they do not want to be here. So, is it okay if we spend 10 minutes chatting, you and I, and then we can finish up then? Does that answer your question? I don't know if I went on a bit of a tangent.
No, that's perfect. Makes you feel better about where I approached the other day as well. Because I had someone not wanting to engage and tried to follow and do what was interesting to them. And we got to trying to fix a bike. And then we didn't have the tools. So we did a dodgy fix. And he went off. And mum was like, come back. You've got to have your therapy. I'm like, let's stop. Let's stop. We've tried like five different things. Let's just spend the time, you and I, and we'll talk about what you need to, about what's going on, because clearly he needs this today.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I've definitely, when we've had those sessions where I'm going, okay, it's not happening today. Today's not the day for whatever reason. And then we come back next time and it's often good. And actually, I think it can be not just like okay, but good, like positive for the therapeutic relationship. If you've had those sessions where it's not a good time and you have respected that young person, what they've said, especially if they've been able to say it out loud to you, like, can I go home? I don't want to be here. And then you respect that and you come back the next time and you're like, hey, this is what happened. How are you feeling? Last week wasn't super great.
And how can you say that? I reflect on the fact that this has happened before. And the session after, I got him to do handwriting and he wrote the most perfect E repeatedly.
There you go.
And now his E's are perfectly sized and shaped and in the right order. None of the other alphabet's okay, but the E
But the E
is
is working.
perfect.
Exactly. I think, yeah, so it may feel like in the moment it's like, a, oh my gosh, like, is this a step back? But most of the time, it's not. It's actually, especially if you can approach it in that, thanks for telling me, I'm going to respect what you have to say, and we'll move on. And that's usually positive. Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions? Any questions from online? Doesn't look like it. That's okay. We'll have our next lunch and learn in July. We have a couple of thoughts in mind, but I don't know exactly what we're doing yet. But as always, if you have suggestions or recommendations or things that you would like to learn, please let us know. We have a list, but we're slowly running out of our ideas. So feel free to bring more. It doesn't have to be specifically like this one was probably quite targeted towards, therapist specifically, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. We can do one more for like families or whatever. We are open. We want this lunch and learn is about helping to educate our community in different ways and giving back to the community in the way that we can. So let us No, if you have any thoughts and questions, either just send us an email. It's on this slide, wherever it is. No, wait, give me a second. There we go. We also have an Instagram down there, Sisu Therapies, AUS is our Instagram, and updates on much of lunch and stuff usually go up there. Usually we try to do them more than 2 days before, but sometimes it gets up a little bit late when we're managing with a small team at the moment. So that's where we're at. But yeah, thanks everyone for joining, and we'll see about our next one, I guess. I'm going to try to stop the recording.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks,
everyone.
Have fun for today. Cool.
See
Bye.
ya.
Bye.
Bye.